From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been 3.5 years since most people with federal student loans have had to make payments on that debt. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit, the government paused loan payments and interest. Well, that era has come to an end. Last month, on September 1st, student loans started racking up interest again. And now, this month, October, payments have started coming due. That affects well more than 40 million Americans with some form of a federal student loan, especially after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down President Biden's plan to forgive something on the order of $400 billion of student loans. Biden is establishing what some consider a backup forgiveness program, but that's going to be a long, slow-moving process. So what happens now, and what policies should we be pursuing with regard to student loans? We talked about all of this on the program back in August, and we are revisiting that conversation today. Up front, I'll say I know a lot of you have passionate views on this topic, and we'll be sharing some of those throughout this program, starting with a voicemail we got just before we originally had this conversation.
Hi, this is Sarah from Bloomington, and I believe that student loans should both be the work of government to work on and the work of individual borrowers to pay back. I'm very passionate about this topic because I believe in my own personal life, it is the one decision, not the decision to attend college, but the decision to attend college by paying for it through both federal and private student loans. It was the taking out of the federal and the private student loans. That one decision in my life has affected more aspects of my life financially than any other one occurrence in my life.
Thank you for that, Sarah. I know you had a lot more to say, and while we don't have time to play it all on air, I really appreciate your calling and sharing your perspective. As I mentioned, we originally had this conversation on the program back in August, so we won't be able to take your calls live. That said, we love hearing what you think about our show, so send an email anytime. The address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is our conversation on restarting student debt payments. Joining us to talk about the process of restarting loan payments is Lynn Baker. She's the Managing Director of Communications with the Illinois Student Assistance Commission, the state agency responsible for college access and financial aid. Lynn, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us to talk about how this fits into the bigger economic picture is Ben Marks. He's a PhD economist and an associate professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Professor Marks, welcome to you as well.
Thanks. Good morning.
And we also want to talk about how the restarting of payments will affect the many Americans with student loan debt. When you think of those people, I bet you're picturing a younger person, maybe a millennial or a Gen Zer. But there are also some 3.5 million Americans over the age of 60 who hold billions in student debt. And joining us to talk about why that's the case is Josh Kilroy. He recently founded a super PAC, Americans for Fair Debt Relief, that's calling on President Biden to forgive the student loan debt of senior citizens in financial distress. Josh, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Lynn, I want to begin with you, and let's start with this idea of the resuming payments. Big picture, how is this process actually going to work?
Well, there's a couple things that student borrowers really need to know now and sort of prepare for as we start repayment, and that's whether or not you were already paying on your loans before the pause, or you're going to be paying on your loans the first time. The first thing you need to do is make sure that you are updating your contact information on your loan servicer's website and in your studentaid.gov profile. That's really important because it's possible that your loan servicer could have changed during this period of time. So they need to know how to reach you. There's a couple ways to do that. You can go to studentaid.gov. You can call the Federal Student Aid Information Center at 800-433-3243 if, for example, you don't know who your loan servicer is. That will help you figure that out. The other thing you might want to do is review your auto debit enrollment and sign up for the first time. Auto debits are not going to restart automatically for some borrowers, so it's a good idea to get that going. You can also, a really important, check out the Federal Student Aid website. They have a loan simulator, And that will help you find a repayment plan that's going to meet your needs and goals. As we know, and you've sort of briefly mentioned, there is a new income-driven repayment plan that could be very helpful to some students. And that's important to know, that there are income-driven repayment plans. So if you think you're going to struggle with a standard plan, there are other plans. It's important to just get this moving as soon as you can, because a lot of people are going to be asking a lot of questions.
Professor Marks, I want to bring you into the conversation. Now, these payments have been stopped for 3.5 years now. How has this changed the way people look at student loan debt?
Well, I think the resumption of payments is definitely going to come as a shock to many people. You know, back in normal times, you would sort of start repaying after you left college. And so there was kind of a natural transition there. Here, as you say, we've got now students who for years have not been paying back their loans. And we actually have some pretty good research that I could talk more about that is finding that this money that people have had in their pockets because they weren't making these payments, they have not been saving that. They've been spending it on things like cars and houses. And so this is going to be a new expense for a lot of people. It's going to really change their budget.
Yeah, say more about that. People have basically integrated this non-payment, I guess, of the last few years into their sort of base, what would you say, mental schema of how much money they have available to them month to month?
Yeah. So the research I mentioned is there's a top paper by a couple of economists at the University of Chicago, one of whom was a UIUC graduate, for what it's worth. And what they did was they utilized the fact that the government paused payments for people whose loans were owned by the government, but not for those whose loans were privately held. And so that sort of gives you a treatment group and a control group that you can compare over time, where, you know, only the first group gets treated with having not having to make payments. And so what these researchers did is they got data from one of the major credit reporting agencies that keep track of all the different types of debt that you have. And they looked at different measures of debt as outcomes. They found that the former students who were not having to make payments, they essentially spent the entire amount that they would have been paying on things like cars and houses that show up as new forms of debt in those credit reports.
Interesting, interesting. All right, Josh Kilroy from Americans for Fair Debt Relief, the Super PAC. I want to bring you into the conversation now. I mentioned at the start that there are millions of people older than age 60 who have student debt. I think that's probably counterintuitive for a lot of listeners, or at least I'll say it certainly was for me when I first heard about your group. How did that end up happening?
Sure. Well, there are a couple of factors. For about 20% of senior borrowers, they borrowed for their children. So that's one source. The biggest source seems to be that many of these older Americans went back to school mid-career, maybe to get a master's degree or a credential in their profession. And then there are people who just have had student loan debts for, you know, 30 years or more at this point. That's the most of the remainder, people who have their original student loan debt. But, you know, the biggest miscalculation people made was to overvalue the lending they made, the borrowing that they made for, like I said, mid-career credentials, to get a master's degree, to get a bump as a teacher, for instance, is a very common one.
It wasn't as remunerative, perhaps, as they had hoped for what they spent, right, is what you're saying. Yeah.
The debt ended up being more, you know, you can easily get $20,000 in debt just to get a master's degree, for, you know, a payment increase of $2,000 a year. And that's, 10 years of nothing but, just the principle of work. And then, if something happens, which happens to people, your car dies and, you have medical bills, you have unexpected expenses, and you get a forbearance, then you fall way behind. And once you get a forbearance, student lending becomes like a payday loan scam, is really the core of it. Once you start taking the forbearances, very, very difficult to keep up.
Lynn Baker with the Illinois Student Assistance Commission. So I noted that at the beginning of this, that the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the Biden administration's plan, which had been to forgive up to $20,000 in debt for student loan borrowers. If that had gone through, what effect would that have had for people in Illinois with student debt?
Yeah, so according to the Department of Education, approximately 1.56 million student loan borrowers in Illinois hold about $59 billion in direct student loans. So according, again, to the Department of Education, more than 1 million borrowers in Illinois would have been eligible for relief under that Biden-Harris plan. And then we estimate, ISAC estimates, about 70% of eligible Illinois borrowers would have had more than 25% of their debt canceled. And the 31% of Illinois borrowers, eligible Illinois borrowers who have $10,000 or less in debt actually would have had their debt completely eliminated under the plan. So it would have been a very significant impact on Illinois borrowers as well as borrowers across the country.
Yeah, a lot of numbers there. I think the one I'm going to take away from that is potentially a million Illinoisans who would have been affected by that policy. Among them, apparently, the daughter of Krista in Rock Falls, who sent us a text message today, said, "I support the idea 100%. My daughter, whose debt is far less than the $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients, would benefit greatly from student loan debt forgiveness." Josh, how did you feel when you heard about the Supreme Court's decision on the Biden debt plan?
Well, I must say I expected it, but nonetheless, it hurts. And it's just fundamentally unfair. So immediately after that weekend is when I decided to, I reached out to some friends and we said we're going to do something. And that's why we formed Americans for Fair Debt Relief. It's a travesty. I mean, the history of the student loan programs is that the rules are continuously stacked against students. And like Sarah said at the top of the show, it was the one single most important financial decision she made. And I'm sure she was 18 or 19 when she made it. And to have, to make such an impactful decision at such a young age, people make mistakes, people misjudge things. And the fundamental injustice in the system is that the student loan debt is not dischargeable in bankruptcy. Lots of people make mistakes. Lots of people have medical expenses. Lots of people owe the IRS money. Those debts can be more or less discharged in bankruptcy. But, you make a decision at 18 and you are stuck with that. And it just is not, it's not fair.
Maybe that's a point worth homing in on a little bit, is the idea that bankruptcy idea you talked about. That is fairly unique among the different forms of debt in America, right?
It's absolutely unique. Like I said, even IRS debt can be mitigated through bankruptcy proceedings. So this was done strictly for the benefit of the universities and the lenders. And it's a gift to them. And it puts all the risk and all the accountability on students. Like I mentioned earlier, we're talking I was 18 when I took out my first loan. And so it's an incredibly young age to make such a momentous decision.
I want to share a couple of more responses we heard from listeners. Ed in Champaign said, "As an alternative to canceling student debt, the federal government should offer student loans at 0% interest and cancel interest on outstanding loans as well." We also heard from Ann in Urbana, who said, quote, "I have mixed feelings about this. Student loans have been around a long time, and many of us have had to pay them off after graduation. But the size of student loan debts have gotten out of hand. I wonder what solutions there are. putting a ceiling on how much people can borrow, putting more government money into state schools so they don't cost as much. I think the debt forgiveness program is a bit of a stretch, but I understand the need. Is there a middle-of-the-road solution? And it's on that note we're going to pause and take a short break. We're listening back to our August conversation on restarting student loan debt payments. Those repayments officially began again this month. We talked about this with Lynn Baker of the Illinois Student Assistance Commission, Professor Ben Marks, who's at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Josh Kilroy, who founded a super PAC, Americans for Fair Debt Relief, that's calling on President Biden to forgive the student loan debt of senior citizens in financial distress. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been 3.5 years since student debt borrowers have had to make payments and since interest was accruing. That was something paused at the beginning of the pandemic. But last month, interest started racking up again. And this month, payments are coming due. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a plan to forgive $10,000 to $20,000 for student borrowers, something the Biden administration proposed. The administration is now working on other programs, but those are expected to be quite slow-moving by comparison. We're listening back to a conversation we had on all of this back in August, before the pause ended. We talked about it with Lynn Baker of the Illinois Student Assistance Commission, Josh Kilroy with Americans for Fair Debt Relief, which is a super PAC focused on the student loan debt of senior citizens in financial distress. Also with us was Associate Professor Ben Marks at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign in economics. As a reminder, our program is on tape today, so we're not taking calls live, but let us know what you thought by emailing talk at 21stshow.org, talk at 21stshow.org. Okay, here now is the rest of our conversation on student debt. All right, Professor Marks, I want to begin with you for this next part of our conversation. The Biden administration is taking other approaches to debt forgiveness. We don't need to go into the weeds on what that entails. It's a much more bureaucratic process, basically, as I understand it. But what do you make of ideas, just the general idea of, you know, that the Biden administration has suggested, right? How do proposals like this, debt forgiveness ideas, affect the way people look at student debt?
So it's definitely going to be different, as you say. My understanding of the new plan is that one of the big focus areas is a new form of income-driven repayment. So this is, if you're not making a very high income, then you don't have to pay as much on your loans at that time. And this new plan is going to be even more generous, so even lower payments. I believe there's something to prevent your loans from growing over time if you're only making small payments and the interest is actually greater than that. They're not going to add that interest to the amount that you owe. So it's a different type of program than the, you know, one time for forgiveness. And I think we'll have to see how all the details of it play out. But I think it's interesting in that it might be more of a long-run solution. If you just forgive people's debt today, what happens 10 years from now when other people have accumulated debt? Are they going to have to repay it? Is this going to change people's expectations about whether loans have to be repaid to the government? I think these are, you know, interesting questions to see play out.
Yeah. And it's interesting you're talking about the root causes. We heard a text message from Greg in Champaign who wrote in to say student debt forgiveness is misguided at best and offensive and a political ploy at its worst. The cost of higher education is the root cause, but I see no effort or energy going toward addressing that. No broad student loan forgiveness should be pursued. There are better solutions to the situation. Professor Marks, is it the size of the loans that's gotten out of hand or the lack of state money going into higher education and therefore the cost of going to university that's gotten out of hand?
Yeah, there are multiple factors. The cost of going to college is a very big one. And you read an email earlier suggesting potential solutions like capping the amount that people can borrow or providing more money to the public universities. I think providing more money to the universities would definitely help. We've seen that in reverse in recent years. As states have reduced their funding, colleges and universities have had to charge more, and so students have to borrow more. So, you know, that's one possibility, but of course that requires political process to come to the decision to provide that funding. I'd be cautious about setting caps. So we already have caps on how much a student can borrow. There's actually very good recent research showing that when those caps are raised so that students are able to borrow more, they do better in school, they're more likely to graduate, they end up earning more money as a result, and they become more likely to repay that loan balance. So even though they owe more money, this ends up being a positive for them and for the government, which recovers more of the funding.
Interesting. Very interesting. Let me ask Josh, let me bring you back into the conversation. So what effect does student debt have on the many people who deal with it, especially, I guess, the people you're most interested in, senior citizens?
Sure. Well, it has a number of complications. So on the one hand, seniors are forced to make tough choices between expenses like rent or medicine, to keep making their student loan payments. We see that there are hundreds of thousands of seniors who are finding their Social Security checks garnished. And for younger people, the decision to buy a house or start a family are forestalled by the crushing debt burden they have.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me share another set of messages. We got Dennis in Pontiac called in to talk about suggested free schooling for anyone that joins the armed forces. And that put me in mind of a text message we got. David from Northern Illinois, although he said he's texting us from Switzerland. He said, I was fortunate enough to go to college for free thanks to the Montgomery GI Bill. However, I think there should be a civilian equivalent, especially for public service workers, engineering, police, EMT, teachers, healthcare workers, etc. Free community college, at least, would be a good start for all of that. At least give us a starting chance. And let's go to the phones now. Rolf is calling on line four. Rolf, thanks for calling in. Where are you calling from today?
Crescent City, Illinois.
Oh, Crescent City. All right. What's going on?
My concern, I went to college and I was fortunate enough to get through college on a college scholarship, an athletic scholarship. But I can certainly sympathize with a lot of these people that are running up big debt. But one of the things that I wonder is, kind of like, how truthful are universities being to students when they take out loans? I think they should be required to kind of give them a fact sheet and show them how many students have made it through, how many students still have debt, how large their debt is, how big of a burden it is. That might be a real wake-up call, because I think when a student is 18, 19 years old, or 17, 18, they're starting college, they think that they're going to, they're thinking of a positive.
Yep, Rolf, I think we lost you there, but I think we got the gist of it. Thank you. Thank you for calling in. Lynn Baker, let me ask you that. So this is the old, you know, I'm just going to paraphrase here, but this is like the art history versus computer science major, right? One has a greater income potential. They might have different graduation rates. What sort of disclosures do students who are taking out loans and their families, what do they learn about their prospects going into the future?
Well, we certainly, and I'm sorry, I have my dog in another room, but he's barking. We certainly do.
All right, live radio.
We certainly do advocate for students to really understand what they're getting into. And schools do provide some of that information, but there are lots of tools out there that students can use, and the students we work with, we point them to many tools, including the high school to career tool in Illinois and the college to career tool that actually gives students a good sense of, you know, what will you make in this profession? You know, if you're going to follow this program, what will your earnings be? And I think that's a really helpful thing for students to do at the outset, to start thinking about, if I'm going to take out loans, you know, for computer science, you know, I may have a better chance potentially of getting a job than if I'm going to take out loans for my English degree. And unfortunately, that may be the case. But it really depends on the program that you're going to go into. And there's lots of tools to help students with that.
It's important to note that over the history of the student loan program, universities have worked in concert with the lenders and with Wall Street. There have been many instances where universities would guide students directly to specific lenders. There were many instances where, you know, it's not even a discussion, where, you know, they just, it's built into the admissions packet when you're accepted. And so, you know, and they're lobbying in Washington. So the universities, you know, have a lot to benefit from this. And as that caller noted, they have no skin in the game. They should absolutely be on the hook for students of theirs, for some of the debt that is accrued by their students.
Interesting.
Might add that it's very important that we educate students, because certainly I hear what Josh is saying, and that is critical. But, you know, we need to work to educate students. There's a lot that students can do to minimize their student loan debt and be informed consumers. You know, most of us went to school. I took out loans. I had no idea what they were. I had not a clue, you know. And today, thankfully, there's a lot of emphasis on this right now, which is helpful, because students and parents hopefully are looking into more, what does this mean? What are these loans and what does this mean? And there are things that students can be doing right now as they're looking into college to help minimize the debt they take on in the first place.
We've been talking about federal loans primarily, but those are not the only types of loans out there. We heard from Sarah in Rockford, who said, federal loans have never been a problem for me. It's the predatory private student loans that hurt. I pay more each month than my mortgage. It keeps me stuck and in a constant state of anxiety. I can't do anything. On the other hand, we did hear from people like Carl in Harvard, who said, why should students get their debt forgiven? If that happens, why not forgive the debt on the $60,000 pickup truck that the carpenter had to buy, or the $80,000 welding rig the welder had to buy? Those people made the choice to go to school. Those people signed up for the loans. If they picked a major that couldn't support the loan, then that's just the problem they're going to have to bear. So, Josh, what do you say to that sort of argument? That sentiment is certainly out there.
Of course, yes. I would say that if the person can't make the payments on the pickup, the car gets repossessed. They have out, if your house, if you can't make the mortgage, it gets foreclosed. And as painful as that is, there's closure. There is no closure for student debt. If there were, you know, if you could allow bankruptcy to discharge this, you know, at least there would be an outlet. But to sign people up for a lifetime of debt peonage is profoundly unfair. That's what I would say.
Professor Marks, in the time we have remaining, I want to talk about some of the economic effects we might see from this. The credit agency TransUnion put out a study last month that found that half the people repaying student loans will pay at least $200 a month once that gets restarted. Same study found that a number of them, one in five, will pay $500 or more. All this adds up quickly. Do you think we'll see an economic effect, a measurable effect, as these payments come back online?
So certainly, if you look at household finances, we're going to see an effect. As I said earlier, a lot of these former students have been using their liquidity to buy houses and cars. So they've now got other forms of debt that they're making payments on. Once you add these payments in, that's, you know, that's going to have to come at the expense of their discretionary spending. So for definitely for households that are directly affected, this is going to be a big deal. And there are enough of such households that I think there could be a macro effect. So I'm not a macro economist. I'm not sure, you know, how big a magnitude this would be, but you would expect that essentially this is going to replace private spending. And so it'll have a little bit of a slowing effect on the economy.
We're coming to the end of our time together. Lynn Baker with the Illinois Student Assistance Commission. We've been talking about the effects of student debt and as this repayment process restarts. I guess, what is the big picture advice you would have for people trying to navigate all of this and the next generations of students and student debt holder?
Well, for those borrowers who are already borrowers and dealing with return to repayment, we would absolutely suggest that you take all the steps that I talked about earlier and also educate yourself on the income-driven repayment plans, because those can be really helpful. And in fact, the new repayment plan, you know, is something to consider, is that if you're a teacher, for example, with that on that repayment plan, on that new repayment plan, those payments that you make will count towards your public service loan forgiveness. So you might get to public service loan forgiveness through not having to pay as much because of your income. So these are important things to think about. But if you are a student who is just starting out and thinking about going to college, getting a certificate, a 2 or 4 year degree, there's just things that you need to remember, you know, right now and get on it, which is complete the FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid, because that will determine your eligibility, not just for loans, but for grants and scholarships, things that you don't have to pay back. It's also so important to remember that do not take out more of a loan than you actually need. So the first thing you should do is see how much grant and scholarship money you have. Then look at if you do need a loan, make sure it's a federal loan, because they generally have lower interest rates than private loans. Mm-hmm. And don't take out more than you need. That means you've got to look at your budget and really realistically think about how much I need to take out. The other thing is, do your best to graduate in 4 years, because that's going to help to minimize the amount that you have to borrow. There's lots of people that can help you. ISAC.org, lots of ISAC Corps members that can help and help you be an informed consumer.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Lynn Baker with the Illinois Student Assistance Commission, Associate Professor Ben Marks from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Josh Kilroy with Americans for Fair Debt Relief. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st show. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.